I'm very grateful to Lucy Betts for having agreed to conduct an interview with our special guest this morning, St. Peter.
So this morning, we bring you our second interview with a famous person from the distant past. We are once more in New Jerusalem, just by the pearly gates, where we shall shortly hope to be talking to St. Peter. We came here a month ago when we met St. Paul, who told us a lot about conversion, sin, and the way of Jesus. Ah, I can hear the jangling of keys, and the gates are being unlocked, so it must be him.
There we are, all ready for the day's work.
Just before we begin, can we clarify something? Why do you always get painted holding a big bunch of keys? I'm not sure we'd bother interviewing you if you were just a doorkeeper.
It's not just any old door, you know. You people down on earth can be so literal, can't you? It goes back to something Jesus of Nazareth said first to me and then to all the disciples. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.
That's a bit mysterious, isn't it?
He was always saying things we didn't really understand. And if there was a wrong end of the stick to get, I was your man. Well, keys are symbols for getting into somewhere. If you've ever lost yours, you'll know how frustrating it is when you're locked out of your house or car. I reckon he meant that I and the other disciples were supposed to work out who was genuinely part of a Christian community and who was just playing around with it or using it for their own advantage.
That's quite some responsibility, isn't it?
Sure. Let me give you an example. Yesterday, a minister and a taxi driver arrived here. The taxi driver is wearing sunglasses, a loud shirt, a leather jacket and jeans. So I say to him, "Who are you?" "I'm Joe Cohen," he says, "a London taxi driver." So I give him a silken robe and a golden staff, and he enters the kingdom of heaven. The minister comes up to me and says, "I'm Colin Thompson, and I've been serving as a pastor for more than 50 years. So I give him an old cotton robe and a worm-eaten wooden staff. He isn't pleased. "What's all this?" he demands. "Why did that guy get all the good stuff and I'm fobbed off with this tat?" So I tell him, "Up here, we go by results. While you preached, people slept. While he drove, people prayed." Then there's the one about the three nuns.
I know that one. It's not appropriate for our listeners, so let's pass on.
Shame.
Last time we interviewed St. Paul, you knew him, didn't you? How did you get on?
Not very well at first. He had this crazy idea that Gentiles were included in God's plans just as much as Jews, so we argued and it got quite heated. In the end, though, I came to see that he was more right than wrong. After all, there are a lot of Gentiles about, and it didn't seem fair to leave them all out just because they happened to have been born different. So we negotiated a compromise.
So how did that work?
Well, Gentiles who followed Jesus didn't have to follow every detail of the law, just stay away from the idol worship practiced by the Romans. You can read all about it in Acts 15.
Tell us, how did you first come across Jesus?
It was more a matter of him coming across us. Me and my mates ran a fishing business on the lake. We were sitting there mending our nets when along comes this guy who asks us to follow him.
So you did?
Right away. Mending nets is quite boring. So off we went. We didn't realise what we were letting ourselves in for. The first thing that happened was that he came to my house, and when he heard my mother-in-law was ill, he cured her. Have you heard the one about when I took her to Madame Tussaud's Chamber of Horrors?
Sorry, mother-in-law jokes are out these days.
Oh dear, Les Dawson will be very upset. He's got quite a following up here, you know.
Anyway, then what happened?
So we followed him around. wherever he went. He taught us wonderful things. He insisted that God's love was for everyone, however bad you think you are or people say you are, and he showed it. He liked being with people who felt they'd been left behind or ignored by their leaders. He made people feel better about themselves and showed that when that happens, they can achieve things they never thought they could. Sometimes it got a bit hairy, especially when he had a go at the authorities.
Did other people join you?
They did. Quite a lot of them. Women as well as men. Even his mother. Did you hear the one about the Jewish mother on a plane? She stood up when they were in the air and shouted, "Is there a doctor on the plane?" A man came up to her and said, "What's happened?" She said, "Would you like to meet my daughter?"
Careful.
Anyway, it was all going so well. He was really popular with the crowds, but not with those in charge. I think they felt threatened. So they did away with him. We were there when they arrested him. It wasn't my finest moment. I denied knowing him, not once, but three times. I was scared it would be me next. And when they strung him up, his mother and her friends stayed, but the rest of us ran off and hid from the authorities.
How did you feel about all that?
Terrible. Knowing he was gone and that I had let him down so badly. Some rock on which to build a church.
But that wasn't the end of the story, was it?
No. When some of the women came in a panic to claim that the tomb where he'd been buried was empty and told us some crazy story about angels who said he had risen, we thought they'd lost the plot. Bodies don't disappear, and people don't rise from the dead, do they? But just to make sure, I went and had a look, and sure enough, he wasn't there. Some of us met up later that day to try to make sense of this. Behind locked doors, the situation was still very tense. And suddenly, there he was, in our very midst.
You mean you saw him?
Yes. And the following week, when one of our number who hadn't been there joined us, Jesus came and stood among us a second time. To be honest, I just couldn't make any sense of it. But I know what I saw, and not just then.
You mean he came to you again?
He did. We'd gone back to Galilee. Jerusalem was too dangerous for us. Back to our fishing business, mending nets, and then not catching anything. It can be very frustrating, all that work, and nothing to show for it. One morning, there was this guy on the shore. He shouted at us to have another go, and we landed an enormous catch, about 100 yards out.
You must have been very glad, thinking about all the profits you were going to get.
We were. Until one of us suddenly shouted, "It's the Lord!" And being the impetuous kind of guy I am, I jumped into the water. The others brought the fish in. Then he and I had this weird conversation. I'm still trying to get my head round it.
What do you mean, weird?
He asked me if I loved him. And he kept asking three times, and that hurt. But I suppose it was a fair question, because I'd denied him three times and then run away, which isn't exactly loving. And each time he asked, I told him, "Yes, I do love you." And he said, "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. I'm a fisherman, for goodness sake. What do I know about shepherds?"
Well, I'm sure you could sign up for a course. A midlife change of job can be quite refreshing.
But that was me being literal again. I don't think that's what he meant. He also said something about when I was old, other people were going to take charge of me. I thought he meant I'd need help washing and dressing myself and getting around. But afterwards, when I was condemned to death for preaching his gospel, some said it was a prophecy of my martyrdom.
I'd heard that you were put to death for that. Why didn't you deny him again? You've got a track record for doing that after all.
Maybe I'd learnt my lesson. As I look back, I see things a bit more clearly now. Some people say that the body of Jesus was stolen, or that we're all a bunch of nutters for claiming that he rose from the dead. But I wasn't going to give up my life for a fraud or an illusion, was I? Not just me either. Lots of followers of Jesus paid with their lives in those early days. Some of them still do.
So going back to the shepherd business, have you worked out what he meant yet when he told you to feed his sheep?
I'm getting there, slowly. He didn't ask me if I believed in him, but if I loved him. And when I said I did, he implied that I should show it by how I lived. It goes something like this. If you love Jesus, you will want to make a difference in the world. You won't just sit there congratulating yourself on being saved. You'll feel this great desire to do the kinds of things he did and does. Everyone has needs. We're all at least a bit broken and incomplete, some more than others. The world is in a mess. People are still maiming and killing each other. There's still so much injustice and inequality. Some of those at the top of the tree will do anything to maintain their power, even if that means condemning others to years of misery. The Christian community's calling is to give people the food they need so that they can flourish. That means practical action. It also means helping people to understand that the hurt they feel often comes from the inside and needs healing from within. When I look at your world, I see a lot of people who are struggling, some in the most desperate situations, others as rich in things as anyone could want to be, and yet unhappy and depressed. There's no shortage of things for those of you who belong to churches to do. You can't do them all at once, any more than I understood everything Jesus said straight away. But you can make a difference where you are and with the gifts God has given you, by small acts, repeated, which help to shape your character to be more like his. Feed those who are hungry with the right food. Give those who are struggling the right kind of care. That's when you find that Jesus is among you.
That's all well and good, but how can people who are themselves full of worries and doubts live up to an ideal like that?
Take it from me. Discipleship includes experiences of failure and betrayal. I misunderstood him. I denied him. I ran away to save my skin. But he has helped me to move on from there. Sometimes I even get to peep inside the gates. You'll still make mistakes. You may still run away when the going gets hard, but that doesn't stop him from taking you as you are, warts and all, and giving you the courage and strength to bring his love into a world which so sorely needs it.
Thank you, St. Peter. I can see the first coachload arriving, so we must let you get on with all your work.
Have you heard the one about the rabbi, the priest, and the minister?
Sorry, we've run out of time.